Hello and welcome to We the People. This has been an immensely distressing week. With over 3.5 lakh COVID cases being reported daily nationwide, the COVID story has hit home. There are very few families who've been untouched by the spread of the coronavirus. Everyone knows someone with a traumatic story. Everyone knows someone who's been infected, and everyone is begging everyone else for help. Especially upsetting this week was watching doctors break down. Doctors who are used to performing under intense pressure, losing their composure. The breaking point being their hospitals running out of oxygen. Yes, doctors are used to performing under intense pressure, but as the rate of the coronavirus infections outstrips the capacity of our health system, they are confronting situations for which nothing in their training prepared them. Doctors are now forced to carry out tasks that don't fit into their job descriptions, scrambling from pillar to post, trying to work the system, trying to get some media coverage in order to force authorities to assign a tanker of oxygen to their hospitals so their patients don't die gasping for breath. This past week's oxygen shortages comes on the heels of a whole year of working round the clock. And tonight, we're attempting to try and understand what the pandemic stresses has done to healthcare workers and their families. Tonight, we want to stand with the thousands of frontline medical practitioners and health workers who face the deluge of death this pandemic has wrought daily and do not have the luxury of opting out, of staying at home and staying safe. We start by, we put together a small panel to represent doctors across India today. We have Dr. Roslyn Kaur Bali. She's a consultant in pulmonology in critical care and sleep medicine at the Apollo Hospital. We have Trupti Galada Beheti. She's an infectious disease specialist. And Dr. Bhagwan Mantri, a consultant pulmonologist at the Moolchand Hospital. Let me start with Dr. Mantri. I know that you lost your father-in-law to COVID a few days ago, but you're still there. On the job, working around the clock, there's no chance of taking a break?
Yes, I mean, the things, I would like to say that it's a never ever seen crisis for all of the doctors before. And the problem in this disease is that we are treating patients and at the same time our family are also infecting. And we have to support them as well. And I can't say the things that happened to my father-in-law, but the thing is that lots of families are there. We are really in crisis. Like even in, if I talk about my ICU right now, the one person is there where wives every day tell me that, every day ask me that, how is my husband? I cannot tell her that her husband is no more. So it is very difficult situation for us. And over above on that, there is a severe crisis of oxygen. I mean, we get the message in the morning that 6 hours oxygen left. We get the message in the middle of the night that 3 hours or 4 hours oxygen left. We just titrate the oxygen. We reduce the oxygen and keep the saturation below 92% so that we can save the 1 liter, 2 liter oxygen of every person, every patient. We just diverting the oxygen from the non-essential areas. We are just having all the non-essential items to the totally the COVID oxygen requirement. So it is very difficult situation for us. And I don't know when it will be end. But again, I would say it is never seen crisis before.
It's a lot of ethical quandaries that you find yourself in, which can be very emotionally stressful, I'm guessing. Dr. Roslyn Kaur Bali, on top of the usual stressors of sleep deprivation, overwork, you were pregnant this year.
Yes, last year I was pregnant. During
congratulations, firstly.
Yes, it's my first baby.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
But you know, I can imagine being a first-time mom in a regular year it can be so stressful. How did you manage in the middle of a pandemic, with keeping your job?
Well, I think I should say that my baby has been my biggest inspiration. She's a fighter. Yes, it was a very, very stressful period for me because I had a lot of complications in my pregnancy. Plus, it was a very stressful, it was a very, it, it is still a very stressful environment to work in. In fact, I had a premature delivery because of the ongoing stress and my complications. But still, somehow I managed. With God's grace, she is now 6 months old, and I'm again back to work because we are again in the midst of a second wave, and there are a lot of patients, and I needed to be back on work, so I am back on work.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, that your baby was premature. But 6 months, you obviously have a very supportive family then. You have a young child at home, and you're there in the middle of all of this with fears that perhaps you could contract something and come home yourself.
Yes. I still take extra care. I wear double masks. I follow all the aseptic precautions. And yes, thank you for appreciating this, that I do have a very loving and supporting family. My in-laws have really supported me all through this period. My sister has supported me. And my colleagues, my senior colleagues, Dr. Rajesh Chawla, Dr. Sukha Kansal ma'am, Dr. Akanksha Chawla, they have been really supportive. They have done my duties. They have been very supportive in all this pandemic and all this turmoil.
It really does take a village. Dr. Trupti Galada, you had an emotional moment that went viral, doctor. It's a scene, I mean, that's really so poignant because, you know, you're sitting behind, I think it's the wheel of your car. And to me, I felt like, you know, there was intent and purpose that you were about to get another task done. But suddenly it seems like your shoulders slump and you break down. Was it any particular incident, or was it just like everything around you, doctors? I mean, everything that you'd repress, it finally got to you.
It was everything that was happening for the last 10 days. You know, what's been happening is that we've seen that there has just been such an acute shortage of ICU beds and oxygen and medications. And I was here moving between two hospitals. And I thought that this is such an extraordinary situation, you know. Amidst all the emotions that we have, I think one emotion that we all really face as frontline workers is the emotion of fear, of the emotion of not having to see your near or dear one in this situation. And how much ever we do not want that to happen, we've had colleagues who lost their lives, or we've had colleagues who've lost their near and dear ones to COVID-19. So this was a video message to my family and friends, and obviously did strike a chord with a lot of people, because right now, like you said, everyone knows someone who's just begging for help. And here, I think as frontline workers, we are really begging to all of you to be safe so that you do not become the next victim to the disease and we are just helpless and cannot offer you any help.
I want to stay with this point that you've raised. Dr. Mantri, how do you all take decisions? You know, on top of those usual stressors of sleep deprivation, overwork, guilt, aren't all of your decisions complicated by a constant fear of catching an infection? Anyone who has to be at work, on site right now, we feel pressure. I know I do. There's judgment coming in from partners, family, friends. Everyone else can duck for cover. Some of us can work from home. You had that Dr. Zahid at Ames who had to remove his PPE goggles and his face shield to re-intubate a patient because, you know, in his defense, he said it was a dimly lit ambulance. His goggles were fogging up and he just didn't think about it, and he took it off and he did the job that needed to be done. But how do you balance out getting your job done while worrying about whether you could be next?
We are just taking all precautions and doing all work continuously without thinking anything. I mean, we even don't know when the things would end. But if you just think about the person who is in pain, the person who is requiring the oxygen, the person who is requiring the high support oxygen therapy, or the person who is really so sick. So we just need to just do continuous work, and that is what we are doing. Like even at the night around 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., I normally take video rounds in the night from the 10 to 12 to see the critical care patients. So even during many a time, we thought that something if the patients develop some pneumothorax or develop some critical thing, we have to just go inside and take the immediate actions. So definitely we are getting tired, and every day in the night we think that probably tomorrow I don't know how much energy would be left in me. But we wake up with the again energy and start the work as usual.
Dr. Mantri, you talked about those ethical quandaries. Trupti Galada Baheti, Dr. Baheti, how do you, and obviously worsening this whole situation is the fact that just logistics aren't there now. There's this Time magazine cover piece on the India's situation right now. It has two patients on the same bed. Today's paper had that visual of three patients outside a hospital, all of them sharing one oxygen tank. And I guess it falls on you doctors to figure out who gets what. I mean, literally, are you playing God?
You're absolutely right. You know, sometimes we just hate playing. You know, we might have someone who's 30-year-old and someone who's 80-year-old, and you know, who do we offer the ICU bed to? We actually use the ventilator for, and this is something that we hate doing because it's not our job to decide who should live and who should die. Having said that, you know, it's like a vicious cycle that we've gotten into in a certain kind. Because of the shortage of oxygen, we see that there would be a lot of people who do not need an oxygen bed or do not need a hospital bed, but will enter the hospital with the fear that when they actually need it, maybe they will not find it. In the bargain, there are people who actually need the bed and do not find it and have to wait for 2 or 3 days to get into it. So I think there are a lot of things that are happening and a lot of things that need to be addressed. And how much ever, you know, as doctors, we've always been trained or taught or practiced that we just do the maximum that we can and help people. Never has it been that we really want to help people, but we are just limited by the resources. And the resources are oxygen. That's something we never wanted.
You know, the other particularly viciousness part of this pandemic, Dr. Roselyn Kaul, it is the fact that apart from it just seeming endless, it's aggravated by this cruel fact that patients die alone, that you can't be with your loved one in their last moments. You can't say goodbye, and it's left to you doctors to perhaps be, you know, the messenger. How do you deal with that?
Well, you can't even believe what kind of a feeling that is. Counseling patients on a daily basis on the rounds, then counseling their attendants, listening to unlimited queries, unlimited calls. To tell you very frankly, I have learned to be patient. Patience was one virtue which I never had. But now I'm so patient, I never get angry at anything. Maybe my baby has taught me that, and this pandemic has taught me that. To be empathetic. I used to think I was empathetic, but now I really know the meaning of empathy. So yes, it's a very big emotional thing to explain to a loved one that suddenly his father or mother or sister has deteriorated, has increased oxygen demand, will now be shifted to ICU or requires an ICU bed and ICU bed is not available. This is what I have been doing since past few days. Last year, the scenario was bad, but it was not so bad. This year it is more bad.
And of course, you're feeling what the outcome, the repercussions of a whole year being squandered, where nobody planned, nobody prepared, because you all were working on the front lines. I want to bring in some other doctors. We have Dr. Harsh Shah, who's an MBBS MD consultant. Dr. Shah, in your case, you're a doctor yourself, but when your mother contracted COVID, you could not find a bed, which is a story we're hearing across India. Many, many Indians are going through that trauma, but as a doctor who serves the nation, you yourself could not find a bed for your own mother when she got COVID?
Absolutely true. As a doctor, currently we are facing tremendous challenges in treating patients, and biggest setback is limited resources and manpower. So we can't, even being a doctor, we can't attend all the patients. And the same experience which I have faced when my mother got COVID, She is 60 years of old, and she is comorbid with lots of ongoing medication. When I found that before 15 days she has COVID symptoms, I got panic looking at the outer scenario of the world. Though I started all the medications at home, but the fear of getting bad and injection was always haunted my mind day and night. I tried to call lots of my colleagues and hospitals for the bed availability, but they were also helpless looking at the situation in the outer world. And those were the sleepless nights treating your own mother with limited resources. Luckily, she got recovered at the home without any need of external support. But I was totally clueless during this period, as there was no beds, injections or oxygen supply. So thinking of that, if being a doctor and having so many contacts with the hospitals and fellow colleagues, if I face this, I can't imagine what other people and the common person outside my house is facing currently.
Truly, we can imagine, because the first people we call when we need someone is a doctor, and if you yourself, but luckily your mom had you, Dr. Shah. She's very lucky for that. Shambhu Narayan, you've completed your final year of MBBS. You're an intern doctor at the Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel Hospital in Ahmedabad. So you're an intern, and I know you shared a very tragic story where you had gone to visit the house of a 76-year-old man. Can you tell us about what job you have to do as an intern and this story that you shared with the We the People team? Shambhu Narayan, can you just unmute?
Okay. Can you listen to me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
As intern doctors, we are advised to go visit the houses of COVID patients. So the motive behind this is to get their vitals and give them advice and suggest hospitalization if and when it is needed. So what happened is, one day I finished my duty earlier than what was expected. So I went to help my colleague, Ali Askar Buriawala. So we went to this house of a 76-year-old man, and we checked his vitals, and it was quite normal. So then we walked out of his house, and I saw a 33-year-old man, which was the son of the 76-year-old patient. He was having difficulties in breathing. He was gasping, trying hard to get in air. So I inquired, like, what is up with this man? And the relative said that he was also tested positive 2 days back. So I checked his vitals, and unfortunately, his SpO2 was sticking at around 89. So I advised the relatives to call the ambulance as soon as possible and to get him admitted. But then the relative said that they called the ambulance the last day, 24 hours back, and no one showed up. And at this situation, we are helpless, actually. We cannot get them ICU nor ambulance or oxygen cylinders. So I left. I had some other patients. I told them to keep trying, and I left to see other patients. But then the very next day, when my friend Ali Askar went to meet the same patient, unfortunately, this 33-year-old man passed away. And but we had to check the 76-year-old father. So we did that. But his vital at that point of time, his SpO2 was also ticking at 89. We asked him as well as the relatives to call the ambulance as soon as possible. But then, you know, the old man just closed his eyes and smiled at us, because he internally knew that no help was going to come. And even if it did, it would be quite late. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, you have to, nothing can prepare you all for what you've all had to endure.
You see, exactly. We are all mere mortals, you know, asked to play the role of God. So, unfortunately, there is a limit to which what we can do. See, I can only exercise the science that I learned to the best of my abilities, nothing more. I cannot arrange oxygen cylinders or ICU or beds or whatever it is.
Well, there's a limit to what you can do. So I want to close by asking all of you doctors, what can we do sitting out here? We try to get your story across to our viewers. If for our viewers, is there any message you would like to give us? Because it looks like the second phase could be, we're told the peak could still be 2 weeks away. So Dr. Bali, first to you, then Dr. Bahiti, and then Dr. Mantri. Your closing words, any message you have for our viewers tonight?
Thank you for asking me this. I would really like to tell everyone that now learn. COVID is here. It's a pandemic. It's something which has come out of blue. now learn what it is trying to tell us, that we have to be systematic in our life. We don't have to play with nature. We have to wear masks. We have to sanitize our hands. We have to maintain social distancing. These three things mean that we have to go by the rules. We can't be reckless. We can't be take things very lightly, which are serious in nature. So go by rules. Don't be reckless. Be empathetic. Help each other.
Be empathetic.
Don't let religion or other things or petty things divide you on minor issues. Humanity should prevail. Humanity is the only thing that will save us. Plus, good sense, good manners, and obeying what is needed for the hour.
Work together for society in a whole. Dr. Mantri, for you, your closing arguments.
So, well said, Roslyn. I mean, we have to obviously taking all precaution there that we must be. I mean, many of the people are taking the precautions, but because of this, from the November to we can say March, April, or in the end of February, this period was there when the COVID was not there. So the people just thought and started walking around. So obviously, continue taking precautions. And one more thing I would like to say: never hide the thing. I mean, the moment the person having temperature more than 99, just get check yourself, because the early treatment is the key for COVID-19.
All right, and Dr. Bahiti.
The most important thing is we really want to remind people that masks work like magic and vaccines work. So please go and take your vaccine when the vaccination drive opens up. We are all sailing through a really rough phase. But if we keep trusting science and ignore all the misinformation that is being shared on social media, be very responsible of what you do, what you say, and what you share. And just hang in there. I think we'll just make it through the second wave.
So much. I do have two more minutes. I have a third year MBBS student who wants to say something on the show. Vatsal Sitharia. Vatsal, go ahead. Unmute yourself.
I actually quite want to add to the situation that we are assigned for the Sanjeevani duty, and much like the interns of the HCP hospital. So we go door to door and check the vitals and other temperatures and anything that the patient requires. And we take the regular follow-up for that. So what happens is actually the government has assigned the database in such a way that same 3 to 4 members of a family who are COVID positive, they are assigned to 3 or 4 different teams. So instead of like one team utilizing their resources for the follow-up and the checking of the whole family, instead 3 to 4 different teams are assigned and their resources are also like being wasted.
All right.
So I would like to suggest to the government to at least adjust the database and help in utilizing as for minimum.
So in a sense, you feel like a cog in the system. You can see how like some of these rules, etc., are made by people who don't actually know how it works on the ground. I think that's a feeling of helplessness that probably many of you feel. Ashna, engineer, is a third year MBBS student. Ashna, go ahead.
So I had my COVID duty last year from August, and we were appointed for the rapid COVID testing, for which ENC had built booths at Crossroads in Ahmedabad all over. So we had to go there for 4 to 5 hours, and we had to wear PPE kits, we had to double mask ourselves, and we just had to take the rapid tests of the people that came to the booths. So it was tiresome because we had to stand under scorching heat, and it was also a new scenario for us because since then I was in the second year, we had absolutely no clinical experience, we had no experience in the field. So to be responsible and to be answerable to so many people was a very new task for us. And to also, we came home, we had to isolate ourselves from our family because we were being exposed regularly to COVID positive patients. All of this along with studying for our university exams, which were held last month. So many students had many mental health issues because there was a lot of burden put on them to do the duty, to keep your family safe, to keep others safe, and also to study and pass the exams. So it was quite burdensome.
Well, thank you all for joining us. I can imagine how distressing it must be to know the seriousness of the matter, to see this apocalypse that we're headed towards and see everybody else around you completely dismissive of everything you're trying to tell them, trying to get them to help them with protecting themselves. But thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your service. And thank you, viewers, for joining us tonight as we acknowledge the incredible work of physicians and their contributions, as we acknowledge the endurance of these medical professions who've been faced with unprecedented demands. And to all our doctors, everybody working, fighting the coronavirus on the front line, we thank you for your service. Good night.